Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And today we are live out here at Pine Woods Social. Ever been here? But this is a cool little patio out here. They've got a massive screen. They've got the SEC tournament games up. Tennessee, Mississippi State tips off in just under 1 hour. So come out here, grab some great food, grab some drinks. They've got a full drink cart out here. They've also got some great giveaways as well. We're giving away two pairs of tickets to the SEC tournament for the noon session tomorrow. We're also giving away Green Day tickets, but you must be present to win. So come out here, enjoy the nice weather, enjoy some great basketball, and come hang out with us here at Pinewood Social on South Broadway. D. Mace is here. Willie Donick joins us from Seattle. How are we doing? Happy Friday.
Hey, happy Friday. Willie, I'm sure your weather may be a little bit better than ours. Then again, maybe not, because you are in the rainy city of Seattle, so it may not be all that good. Am I picturing it right, Willie? Am I picturing it right? A little bit overcast?
I expected rain. I expected rain, but I'm told that by the locals here, this is the best weather they've had all winter long. So the sun is out. This is a day to get out in Seattle. And tomorrow it's going to be even warmer. Right now it's in the mid-40s, but it's going to get up to about 60. And tomorrow in the mid-60s. So people are out. People are hanging. So this
you know why that is, Willie.
This is a good day to be out here.
You know why that
it's because I'm here.
It's because the Preds are bringing the heat.
Absolutely. They're bringing that heat from Winnipeg all the way to Seattle to the States, Willie. Woo, woo.
They're going
red hot predators.
They're bi-coastal. Well, speaking of those red hot those red hot predators, Chris Mason will join us in 30 minutes. I want to get C. Mace's perspective of, you know, just this heater that the Predators have been on. Like, they simply just cannot lose. They've been playing so well. So we'll break it all down with C. Mace in just about 30 minutes. We heard from Calvin Ridley at the podium, so we'll react to that, what Calvin Ridley had to say, because it sounds like someone's coming in with something to prove, and I think that could be nothing but positive things for this Tennessee Titans offense. We'll get into all of that, but I want to start here with some breaking news that broke during our show yesterday, and it was the news that Vanderbilt was parting ways with head coach Jerry Stackhouse. We got an initial reaction. Yesterday was such a crazy day. We had hockey news and tournament news and Titans news. I don't think we really got an opportunity to fully break down our feelings and our perspective and really what comes next for Vanderbilt basketball. And I'll start off with my perspective of this, that I think it was the right move, that it was just time, that it had ran its course. Jerry Stackhouse was there for 6 seasons, didn't get an NCAA tournament appearance. This season, it was a massive step back after what seemed like a step forward in the 2022-2023 season. So it was time. But it doesn't mean that I think that the next coach that comes in can just start fresh and start new and it's going to be a brand new chapter in Vanderbilt basketball. Because even if it's the same, even if it's a different coach, it's the same Vanderbilt. And I think about it kind of like a breakup, you know? Like, even if it's time to move on from somebody, if they're not compatible for you, if you just know, hey, you know, we've had a great time, but this has run its course. That doesn't mean that you don't need to work on yourself. That doesn't mean that there were probably some aspects in the relationship that you could have been better with, that you could have improved upon. Because I have to wonder, and Willie, I want to get your perspective on this. I have to wonder how many of Vanderbilt's problems that they were experiencing were truly Jerry Stackhouse problems, and how many were Vanderbilt problems. And by Vanderbilt problems, I mean lack of NIL, just different resources. Not as many resources that the rest of the 13 teams in the SEC and soon to be 15 teams once Oklahoma and Texas join the SEC. Vanderbilt doesn't have the same resources. Vanderbilt doesn't have the same robust collectives that Tennessee or Kentucky or Georgia or Florida might have. That if a new coach comes in, how many of the same issues is that coach going to face that Jerry Stackhouse faced just because of the lack of resources? To what extent can things really change?
Well, let's look at the last couple of years with the Vandy United movement. They have a brand new state-of-the-art locker room. It's as good as any locker room that you have. And in this day and age, honestly, our facilities may be as important as they used to be. And now the world of NIL, maybe not. Maybe the kid would rather have 50 grand than have a nice locker room. I don't know. But they have an absolutely beautiful locker room that I've seen that is brand spanking new. So they put a ton of money into Memorial Gym and the areas around it. So, and it's only going to get better once they get all the construction done around Memorial Gym with the football
stadium.
There is
a lot of construction.
There's a ton. It's a barrier right now. I mean, it's a pain in the butt to get over there, but that's a very short-term thing. So I think facilities-wise, they are on their way to catching up. So I don't think that's an issue. I still think Memorial Gym is a tremendous venue to play in. I'm biased, but it's a matter of putting a product out there. If you do, then I think the people will come, and it's a great place to play. You've got the city. The academic requirements as far as getting into the school, I think they've tackled that. That's not a problem that it, maybe it once was 20 or 30 years ago. I think the two things that I would ask if I were going after that job now would be, A, what are my rules as far as transfers? I think when I say the academic, they've addressed it, right? You have to want to go to school. If you don't care about school, you don't want to come to Vanderbilt to begin with, right? You're coming. But as far as your entrance requirements, it's a lot more flexible. They basically ask, can you do the work? Can this person do the work? Can they graduate from Vanderbilt if they want to come to Vanderbilt? It's much more general than it used to be, where you got to have an A in this class, you got to have this for your SAT score, you got to have that for your ACT score. It's nothing like it used to be with that. So they're okay there. They've got their formula. The new formula is, with the transfer rules being so fluid, what are the transfer rules going to Vanderbilt? How do you get a Vanderbilt degree? That is an issue. It's not as easy to transfer into Vanderbilt as it is to a lot of other schools. And that's how it should be. Vanderbilt's just not handing out degrees to people that went there for 1 year. I think that's how I understand it anyway. And I get that part of it. But if I'm a coach, I want to know exactly what I can do there and what I can't do. And then, obviously, the NIL is a new thing for everybody. But Vanderbilt was not on the forefront of that like, say, Tennessee was and a lot of other SEC schools. I'm told that they've gotten – you can read what Joe Rexroad wrote on this.
Yeah.
I think they've come a long way in the last year with that. I think they feel like they are in a place now, especially for basketball. We're not talking about as many people as with football, where you got, I don't know, how many, you could have as many as, you know, 50, 60, 70 guys getting substantial money. That's different than a dozen guys for a basketball team. So they feel pretty good about being competitive in NIL now. I don't know what it was when it started, and I'm sure Jerry Stackhouse would probably have some thoughts about what it was like when it first came into play and how that affected him. But that's what I would want to know as a coach, is what are my transfer rules? What are the NIL resources that I have? Because you got to compete in that world right now.
The way I look at it, Willie, this is all about NIL. And yes, they may have gotten better, but you're talking about a program that didn't jump on the NIL bandwagon when every other SEC school did. And then when you say, well, they're doing better, well, what is better? When you're at ground zero and you're doing a little bit better, you still ain't caught up with everybody else.
And that's everybody like, else is getting better at the
exactly.
same time.
Exactly. That's like, you know, the situation is, you know, we're in as a country when it comes to jobs. We lost a bunch of jobs last year, but then years ago, and then they said, well, we've created 200,000 more new jobs. Well, did you catch up from the jobs that you lost? Because you're trying to make it seem good here when in actuality you haven't even reached, you know.
Like you're taking one step forward
exactly,
and you're 3 steps
absolutely.
Behind.
You took 3 steps back and took 1 step forward, mm-hmm. which means you still are not doing anything. People are still without jobs. People are still trying to, you know, make ends meet. That's Vandy. It's like, okay, yeah, you started doing something with NIL, But you were way behind everybody else. Now when you say, okay, we're starting to do some things with NIL, well, hell, what are you doing? You're not doing enough that's going to catch you up with everybody else in the SEC in regards to your athletics. That's because to me, NIL has changed. And you said it, Willie. These kids, now you don't have to build $300 million facilities anymore or $30 million facilities anymore. You don't have to do that. Why? Because these guys are wanting the money and these girls are wanting the NIL deals. They don't care too much now about the facilities. As long as the facilities are nice and they can come in and they can relax and they can do the things they want to do within that facility and they have everything they need, that's fine with them. Now they're like, listen, how much money are you giving me? That's the reason why Nick Saban chose to segue himself out of college football. Why? Because he said the questions were no longer like, hey, you know, how's the university, all these other questions. It became, coach, when am I going to play? And more importantly, how much money are you going to give me?
Yeah.
That's what these kids, men and women, are saying now. Not all of them, but when you're talking the top four, I mean, five-star and four-star student-athletes, that's what they're saying. Because they're like, listen, up the street at UT, they may give me X amount of dollars. Vandy, how much are you going to give me? You said you started doing something. What are you doing? You got to start putting pen to paper now. Mm-hmm. Enough with the lip service. You got to go out and recruit these guys and these girls. And if you want a championship team, you have to buy it. No longer can you just go out and recruit and sit on the throne and say, hey, listen, I'm Nick Saban or I'm Tom Izzo or one of these other great coaches. No, these kids are saying, that's nice. I get it. You won a lot of championships. That's great. But how much money are you giving me? And if you can't answer that question or you can't satisfy that thirst that these student athletes have, you're not going to get them. I don't care if it's a transfer or a kid coming in from high school. You are not going to get these four- and five-star kids unless you pay them money.
Oh, yeah. I think that's simply the world that you live in now. So I think they've addressed it. I think they're ready to – look, I think when they interview that coach, the coach is going to turn the interview around to them too.
He's going to have
to. Tell me what you got. Tell me what I've got to work with here. And – this is what I understand it to be. I've tried to ask around. Uh-huh. Here's the situation. Vanderbilt is not going to have thousands of people putting 150 to 500 to a couple thousand, and you know, they're never going to have that many people that an Alabama or a Tennessee or the bigger schools in this
they
league
got the money, Willie. Have. Don't say they ain't got the alumni. They have the money.
Let me finish, Derek. Hold on. Let me finish. They don't have as many fans. Okay, so they don't have as many people putting money into the till to the collectives, so they have to do it differently. And so what I understand is there are some big mm-hmm. families that have decided, because they didn't have this before, that they've mm-hmm. had to sort of start their own thing, but it's a very, very small amount of people that are putting up a lot of money. And the question is that sustainable over the long term? It's going to give them a good start, and it's going to mm-hmm. catch them up. For the time being, but over time, right? You guys know as well as I do. At Caroline's alma mater, LSU, they've got thousands of fans that are they'll kick in $100, $500, whatever it is, and that money adds up. Vanderbilt does not have that same type of fan base right now, and they never will. Right? They need to do way better in that area, but they're going to have to go about the NIL differently than other schools, and that's where they have to philosophically decide. If they want to be in this game, if they want to be in this league, if they want to be in this system, this is what they're going to have to do. And they've realized that. And like I said, it's a lot easier to do it in basketball than it is in football.
Oh, they want to be in this league, Willie, because they want the money.
Absolutely they do.
Cha-ching, cha-ching.
They want the money, but they don't want
– yeah, but you don't want to get your butt kicked.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you've got to compete. You've got to bring it to the table. Now, I will say this too. Uh-huh. I would like to think that the next coach – the successful coach is a coach that does still value bringing people to Vanderbilt that want to be at Vanderbilt, that aren't just coming to be, you know, I don't know, mercenaries that are just out to make a couple of bucks for a couple of years.
I'm going to
tell you, Derek, I don't think Vanderbilt fans want that. I think they want to – I mean, you've got to play the game, and you've got to get the players. But I believe there's a formula out there where you can build a program that people want to come play for, that you in a great city like Nashville, at a great school where you get a great experience, and you're not out just with your hand held out and saying, you know, what's in it for me? Give me some money. I think you want the kid that has the big picture in mind, that does value the college experience, and you want the best of all worlds.
Yeah, you do. Listen, I am not going to sit here and poo-poo the college experience because I enjoy my college experience. I tell my son every day, enjoy your college experience, man. You know, make friends. You know, enjoy it. Do your work. Concentrate on your work. And he has, but enjoy the college experience because you're not going to get that. Once you leave, it's gone. But my thing is this, Willie. In order to start a program up, you got to have some mercenaries. You got to have a few of those. You got to have
a few guys that are going to come in here.
Yeah, you got to have a few guys that are come here and maybe one and done. But that's what you got to have in order to attract everybody else. If you don't have those mercenaries, so to speak, who wants to come here?
I have a question for both of you.
That's a good catch 22 because you have to make it a place that people want to play for. And if you're losing big, the best players aren't, even if you are offering them something, they're not going to want to come to play for a school that is losing. So you got to build.
Exactly.
Is Vanderbilt a good job?
It can be a good job.
I think it's an excellent job.
Right now, I don't know if it's a good job because what we've seen, and we're only talking from the basketball side, ever since Starling left, what has happened? The successors of him have only lasted, what, 3-4 years? 4 years max, and I think Stackhouse was the longest, and they've only had Drew and Stackhouse. But until you establish that you are making it a priority that you may have to go out and get a one-and-done and have to pay that individual, you're going to keep on going through this cycle. Vanderbilt can be a great job. You just said it, Willie. Great city. I'm sure they're upgrading facilities. We figure they have the money. It can be a great job, but it's not a great job because it seems like they've handicapped the coaches. Now, I don't know what they're going to do moving forward. You know, like you said, Willie, now whoever gets hired, he's going to be interviewing Vanderbilt, not the other way around, because he's going to be like, listen, why should I take this job? I'm a good coach. Why should I take this job? Are y'all going to give me the tools that I need to recruit, keep these young men here, and I help them graduate? Are y'all going to give me that? Because when I say, are y'all going to give me that, what I'm really saying are y'all going to give me some money? Are y'all going to give me the money to bring these guys in?
You can't compete without it right now.
Yeah.
And this is a new thing. But I don't think that it keeps it from being a job that people – I think when you see the candidates that are going to go after this job, I think a lot of people are going to take a shot. I don't think they're going to have a poor pool of candidates go after this job.
And, again, I think it's a good job. I think – Candace Lee is a great AD, but she and everybody else that has a hand in the hiring practice, they got to make it attractive for the next coach. And then the coach, once he takes the job,
absolutely,
he has to hit the ground running. He has to.
Willie, you're going to be mad at me when you hear who I think Vanderbilt should hire.
I know who you're going to say.
Tom Izzo? No, he ain't leaving Michigan State. Don't worry about
Will
it.
Will Wade.
Hey!
Why do you think Will Wade?
Because I think that right now, Vanderbilt is not a great job because you do have inherent disadvantages. You compete in the most competitive league, if not one of the most competitive leagues in college basketball, and you are working with a different set of resources and money than every single other team in this conference, and it's only going to get more difficult. If I'm an up-and-coming young coach, maybe at the Group of Five ranks, I would have to really think about if I want to take that job or not, or if I want to just sit back and wait my turn and wait for another bigger, larger collective school and for that opening to open up. I think Will Wade would take an opportunity to get back into the SEC. Vanderbilt's not a perfect job, and Will Wade's not a perfect candidate, but he's a really good coach.
A marriage made in heaven.
He
right
is
there.
A really good coach, and I think he would jump at the opportunity to get back into the SEC. And I know it comes with a lot of baggage. I know it could come with some negative PR, but he can win games. And if you're working at a school that it's more difficult to recruit to than Tennessee or Kentucky or Florida or wherever, Will Wade has a proven track record of winning and recruiting. And he's doing it at
McNeese.
Well,
wait, look, let's say this about Will Wade. He's from Nashville, right? I think there was a time even 10 years ago he would have crawled to Nashville for that job. And I admire that. I like that he appreciates Vanderbilt that much. And look, if there's a guy that could play, quote, the game to get players, it's Will Wade. And
he played the game before the game was a game.
Exactly.
And the game now that got him in trouble is much more legal now. You don't have to cheat to do what he was trying to do, right? It's just part of the game now. So I think it under these rules, I think he will have a lot of advocates that bring his name to the table. You're already hearing it, right? That's the guy that you should hire. And so I'm not going to cross him off the list, but I will say that I think it's very unlikely that everybody over at Vanderbilt says, oh, yeah, that's our guy. We'll wait, because I don't think they will ignore his disregard for the rules when they did have the rules, right? I think that's a major thing. And unlike some other schools that give the guy the second chance, right, and we've seen plenty, the Hugh Freezes and on down the line, who got, you know, badly drilled for cheating, Ed Orgeron, to get the second chance. I don't think Vanderbilt is quite in that mode. I think there will be plenty of other candidates that I think could win that are very, 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 very good coaches. But, look, Derek makes a good point. You're starting from the bottom. You need a jump start. Right. Will Wade absolutely would be the jump start. He would bring the money to the table. He's already said it. I got a lot of money. I'm bringing money. Right. He's going to make those strong ass offers. Right. To use his words. Right. That's what
he can make
your quick fix. He's going to say, I'm your quick fix. I love Nashville. I grew up in Nashville. I can make it happen quick. And in this day in college basketball, it can happen that way. But I don't know if that's going to mix with what Vanderbilt wants to do.
I don't think it will, but hey, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. A little bit of breaking news before we get to Chris Mason coming up next. Aaron Donald has just announced his retirement.
Oh, wow. I'm sure that was – I wonder if that was a surprise to the L.A. Rams.
He had been flirting with retirement.
2 years ago after they won a Super Bowl, he did.
And I didn't know if how serious that was, if that was – I'm not sure, but it Aaron Donald has announced his retirement, first ballot Hall of Famer.
Definitely.
Yeah.
He's in a long line of, you know, great defensive linemen that have come through the NFL. And he would, you know, you can argue that he ranks at, you know, a top 10, 5 or 10 mm-hmm. defensive linemen in this game. You know, in the likes of Reggie White, for instance, who else, Willie? Throw some other guys out there. A lot of names are J.J. Watt. I need to go back to
he's right up
Smith.
There.
Strahan. Guys like that.
Yeah.
You know,
Too Tall
Warren
Jones.
Sapp. Too Tall Jones. Yeah. You know, guys like that. Long line of just great defensive
Richard
linemen.
Dent.
Richard Dent. He falls in that category with them. So I think, yeah, he is a first ballot Hall of Famer, at least to me.
Now, I think so, too.
Well, you know, when who else chooses to retire this year, that's a little bit different. It may hold him out just a year, but if it's not a first ballot, then I think he will get in the next following year when he's eligible.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll catch up with C. Mace, Chris Mason, coming up next. Talk about those red freaking hot Predators and their matchup with the Seattle Kraken coming up tomorrow evening. Caroline Willie D. Mace, we're live out here at Pinewood Social in South Broadway. Come hang out with us. We'll have a bunch of giveaways. We're giving away two pairs of tickets to the SEC tournament tomorrow for the noon session and also a pair of tickets to see Green Day. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
It's time!
Shot broken up in front, and what a slick backhand try right in front of Chris Mason. And now the quick pass down the middle, breaking in, and the backhand stopped by Chris Mason. And Marlowe with a 2-on-1, a 3-on-1, and what a stop by Mason. Chichu right in front, and what a stop on Ekblom by Mason.
And goal! Number 3, Chris Mason!
Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are broadcasting from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, which today is Pinewood Social in South Broadway. Come hang out, watch the SEC tournament games. And joining us now is Chris Mason, C. Mays. Those Predators went on the road and whooped some Winnipeg butt. And it was an awfully impressive showing from the Nashville Predators. How do you view that kind of maybe as a measuring stick game against the Predators and a team that they could likely see in the first round of the playoffs?
I think it was really good. I mean, I think more importantly, you know, who knows what, you know, Winnipeg, obviously they, you know, I talked to a lot of people from their side and they understood, they're like, the Preds are playing really good. You know, all the things, it could be a first round matchup, but I don't know for sure if they had the same level of urgency, because it sure didn't look like it in the game. You know, but they've been one of the top teams. They've got a lot to play for. As you mentioned, Caroline, they're trying to win the Western Conference. They want to be that one seed. It's a team that loaded up. They think they have a chance to go for it. They're one of the teams that I would consider in the elite grouping with Dallas, Colorado, Vancouver, and then Winnipeg. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out, because a lot of that race is going to impact, you know, what the Predators do and wherever they finish, if they're going over to the Pacific or if they're staying in the Central. But to me, I would say, okay, this is a test. A lot's at stake for both teams. You know, Winnipeg understands the situation. They're trying to win the West. And then the Predators, you're playing a top-tier team. Let's say you caught the Avalanche on a bad night at home. When Nashville, you know, beat them pretty handedly. But this was a different story. This was every facet of the game Nashville was better in. They got up for the game. They understand how they have to play. They made the right decisions. It was just, it was really impressive. Probably, to me, the most impressive game of the season so far, just because I think, you know, you get on a win streak. And then when it's, you know, you're playing a team like Winnipeg, it's a different ball game. You got to be ready. You got to be ready to go, and you almost have to be perfect. And they were almost, you know, better than that, I think, in terms of the way that they dismantled the Jets.
Everything has just been clicking. They've been playing at such a high level, and Wednesday night's game was no difference. But coming from your experience, what is it like after the deadline? You know, of course, Barry Trotz, it's a soft bye, bringing in Anthony Beauvillier and Jason Zucker. Jason Zucker finds the net on Wednesday night. But what's that dynamic like, trying to gel and mesh and build that chemistry with a couple of new players so late in the season?
It's exciting because I think, you know, it's just a league. You always have to continually prove yourself. And even though, you know, Zucker and Beauvillier are veteran guys, you want to get in, you want to make a good impression on the coach, on the fans, on your teammates, you know, the guys there already that, you know, a lot of the guys that played for the Preds all season long, they want to make a good impression on the new guys. But you're kind of getting in a situation now, you know, this part of the season, everything's going so good. This is a big, you know, win streak. They have a chance tomorrow to get even more separation, maybe put Seattle, you know, out of the equation with a win against them. But there's still, you know, almost, you know, 18-17% of the season left, a big chunk of games. And, you know, I worry about keeping this level of intensity the whole way through. And you know, as they try to build that chemistry and as they try to, you know, do all these special things that they're doing right now, there's a long way to go. And sometimes there's a crash after these long streaks. I think you kind of saw it in Milwaukee. I know they had some injuries and things like that. But when you go on a long winning streak and then you maybe lose a couple, there can be a little bit of an emotional crash. So, you know, that's all hypothetical. But that's one thing that I worry about. There's still a lot of hockey left to be played.
We'll talk with Chris Mason, part of the Nashville Predators broadcasting team, along with Willie Donick. Now, C-Mace, what are you seeing in the third and fourth lines? Because together, combined in the last 10 games, they are double-digit goals. And it seems like they're playing really well. And this is what we were concerned about early on in the season. Where are they getting secondary scoring from? Well, now we see, well, within the last 10 games, we see where this secondary scoring is coming from. And it's coming from, you know, lines three and four. So what are you seeing from those lines?
Well, I think finally that's a great point, because that's a massive part of the team's success right now. You've got guys that, you know, have offensive skill. Obviously, McCarron was a first-round pick. He's a big guy. We know what his role is, but he has skill. He can make plays. He gets in there. He's good on the forecheck. Kiefer Sherwood, another guy on that line. You know, he's been a superstar offensively in the American Hockey League, and he's kind of changed his role to play up here to more of a physical grinder type of a player, forechecking player. But he has those offensive skills, and I think now that they're getting that chemistry, Cole Smith, they just get in there and they just absolutely hound teams. They get on the forecheck, they get that puck back, and now with their confidence and you know, the chemistry that they've built and the role that they've really thrived in is the catalyst, the identity role. They start every game. I mean, you're starting to see them make plays, and the game is slowing down a little bit for them instead of just going in there and, you know, hitting everybody and, you know, doing the old Hanson brothers thing, getting the energy and then get off the ice. Now they're starting to make plays. They're starting to, you know, use their offensive skill sets that they have. And it takes sometimes a while to translate, you know, at the National Hockey League level, because that's not necessarily your role. And you don't want to make a mistake doing that if you're the fourth line. But, you know, now they're just every game, whether they are on the score sheet, they have been on the score sheet a ton. They're creating plays, they're playing the offensive zone, and they're still played to their identity. So it's been fantastic. And then, you know, Tommy Novak's line as well with Evangelista, he's grown so much this year in terms of his overall game. And Tommy Novak as well with the new contract, but he had that big injury and it took him a while to get back going. And then Mark Jankowski on that line too has really, I think, been dynamic in his ability to, you know, kind of shore up their defensive side of things and maybe bring them into that part of the game. Because if I was going to pick a weakness of maybe, you know, Evangelista and Novak, would be, you know, defensive situations. But they've really, as a line, I think, improved so much. And if you can kind of round that part of your game, you're going to play with the puck more, and then you're going to have more ability to go in and make offensive plays, which they have done as well. And it's been, you know, obviously everyone has been contributing, and you don't go on a streak like that with one line going, you know. So it's been nice, and that makes it, you know, really hard for opposition to match up lines. It's a really tough decision for the other coach who to put out there against the lines, because everyone's scoring right now.
Talking to Chris Mason, talking some Predators hockey. They play the Seattle Kraken tomorrow night. So, Mace, let's talk about UC Saros, because he's such a big part of the equation here. What are you seeing in his game right now that has allowed him to get to his best? Because we've definitely seen that jump, and that's a huge part of what they're doing right now.
I just I think, you know, there's a certain point when there's elite guys, and he's one of them. He's had maybe his most up and down season, I think, in the NHL. It's been a process for him, you know, because he's had some really good stretches, some stretches where he may be, you know, letting in some goals that, you know, aren't characteristic of, you know, his past and his abilities. He's had some really unlucky stretches where, you know, it just seems a string of goals going off his own guys. It's been really challenging. But I think in the long run, I think that's a really good thing for any player, especially, you know, one that's had a career like Juice has, and he hasn't had too many of these situations to deal with. And, you know, finally it comes to a point in the season, and for whatever reason, you know, going down that last part when it matters and your team's trying to get in the playoffs or you're trying to move up in the standings, he seems to bring his best hockey. And it was kind of almost in conjunction with the team. It was almost like it was one day everybody just decided, and Juice as well. And I think it starts with him, because I remember early in that St. Louis game, that first game after that blowout, he looked like a different player. He looked like, all right, that's Juice. And usually early in the game, you know, when I'm watching Juice, I can tell if he's on, and just the way his eyes are connected to the play, his movements, anticipating, you know, cross ice plays and finding pucks through screens. And he looked like he had that, you know. And then right now. Again, once you get that and you do it again, that confidence is back, and then the game just, it just slows down from him. But, you know, I've got to give the guys in front of him a lot of credit too, because I think they're doing a really good job of letting him see as many pucks as possible. Everybody's in there helping, on the rebounds. But, you know, we saw Winnipeg, Toffoli breakaway. Still, they give up those chances. Of course, other teams are going to create offense against him. And he's making those big saves early, allowing the guys to, you know, get off to some really good starts. And then the third period shutdowns, he's just been rock solid.
We mentioned this before, Mace, when he was going through some struggles. We wondered if the burden of all those trade talks were affecting him at all. And, of course, that was still sort of out there as he started to get things going like he has recently. But what do you think of his just peace of mind right now that the trade deadline's gone? What effect do you think that's having, if any?
I think it always has an effect. And we talked about this, too. As much as any player says they're trying to, you know, block it out and, you know, not think about it, it's there. And even if you try to do that, you know, you can't really control your own thoughts. You have to have the thought and then try to put it aside and not worry about that. But it's there, and it's a level of uneasiness to have an uncertain, you know, some decision made that you have no control of sitting in the balance, and you're going to the rink every day, trying to play to the best of your ability and not worry about that. You're able to do that, I think, a lot easier, and you learn how to do that as a pro athlete, to compartmentalize personal stuff and those types of feelings and put them aside. But the fact that they're there, they're on your mind, they're weighing you down, and everybody handles, that kind of thing differently. But, I think for him, and this is just me guessing, it was a good peace of mind to have that over for any of these guys. You know, Carrier, all these guys that were worried about the uncertain future, and there was so much talk, especially around our team. You know, the Predators, depending on the situation, were they going to sell everybody? Were they going to try to re-sign guys? They were talking about contracts. And obviously the Saros, Skarov conversation was real. A lot of people were talking about that. What could you get for Saros? And, you know, they hear that. So I think once that's that deadline's passed, it's like a big exhale for everybody. And you're like, you know what? All right, I don't have to worry about that anymore. I can just 100% hockey. And I think you've seen with this group, it's been pretty impactful to have that come and gone.
See, Mace, you are the best. Appreciate your time. Have a great call tomorrow night, and safe travels back from Seattle.
Thank you, guys. Have a great weekend.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mace. We are broadcasting live from Pinewood Social, located at 33 Peabody Street in Nashville, for Pinewood Madness Patio SEC Watch Party presented by Guinness. It is worth the wait. So come showcase your arcade skills. You can win fantastic prizes. We have two pairs of SEC tournament tickets to give away for the noon session tomorrow, plus Green Day tickets as well. So come grab some frozen cocktails, some game day bites, and come play some lawn games. Again, out here at Pinewood Social in South Broadway. Calvin Ridley just took the podium, and I am hearing, and I didn't get an opportunity to listen to it in its entirety, but Titans fans are fired up about what Calvin Ridley had to say, so we will get into that. We'll get into that at the top of the hour. But first, I had a quick thought on a move made yesterday. I don't know if you guys saw this, but Keenan Allen was traded by the Chargers to the Chicago Bears. The Chargers also waived Mike Williams yesterday as well, maybe it was 2 days ago. The Chargers now have Josh Palmer, Quentin Johnston, and Darius Davis as the only receivers on the roster. Do you know who Darius Davis is? Never heard that name in my life.
Darius Davis?
Yeah. He's like,
are they making a big deal about him?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm just looking at the depth chart. So, like, all that to say, Chargers don't really have any receivers.
No. Nah.
Chargers are taking a receiver with the 5th overall pick.
You never know, because, you look at Jim Harbaugh and you look at his mentality. He's a hard-nosed, old-school, with new-school sort of attributes, but the core of him is old-school. We're going to run the football. We're going to be physical, and we're going to try to dominate you on defense. That's who Jim Harbaugh is. That's who his brother is, John. That's who the dad is. If you just really look at those two, because his dad doesn't coach anymore, but if you look at those two and their makeup and how they make up their teams, it's similar. There's a reason why that pipeline from Baltimore to Michigan, Michigan back to Baltimore was so just prevalent because they think the same way. So it's not a sure thing that they're going to take a wide receiver. They may choose to take an offensive lineman. Some mock drafts have them taking Alt at the fifth pick. Why? Because Jim Harbaugh wants to run. He wants to set an attitude. He wants to set the tempo of the game. The Chargers for so long have been considered a finesse team. When they had LaDainian, all it. Yeah. Even going back to when, you know, they had Dan Fouts and Wes Chandler and all those guys, they were considered a finesse team. Willie, no, they were one of the first teams, the Air Coryell, they were throwing the ball around the yard. Them, Miami, and the Oakland Raiders, that's going way back. So he's trying to change the identity of the Chargers. They are considered a finesse team. He wants to be more of a physical team. So they may need wide receivers. You're right. They may need wide receivers, but I think he may go the route of getting an offensive lineman.
And if they do take a receiver, I think that's only a good thing for the Titans.
Yeah.
Because that pushes Joe Alt even further down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, just looking back, though, thinking about all those weeks and years where either as a fantasy owner who had Justin Herbert or Keenan Allen or Mike Williams, or you're a Chargers fan that is waiting for it to hit, and it just never did, right? With Keenan Allen and Mike Williams and all of that, that is just such a collection of talent that never really materialized. And it just looks like Jim Harbaugh is saying, we're going to wipe the slate clean, and we're going in a totally different direction. I'm really interested about what happens with Mike Williams, because for about 4 weeks a season, he's awesome.
Then
the other weeks, he's either hurt. Yeah, you get about 4 weeks if you own him for fantasy, and you just got to pick the right 4 weeks, which is never possible, right? But at the rest of the time, he kind of teases you because he's such an immense talent, but he can't stay healthy. So what's his value, D-Mace? That's a really interesting question.
Well, it's his value has to be – it's one of those, you know, low-risk, high-reward type deals because, you know, again, he has the talent. But will the talent be on the field long enough to benefit from it?
And that's the thing. If you can't stay on the field, even on a low deal, $4 or $5 million deal, if I'm paying you $5 million to be hurt, that's $5 million that's not going on to the product on the field.
Exactly.
All right, hey,
D-Mace.
Huh?
Your Sparties are trying to hang.
I know.
With Purdue. Do you have it on there? Is it on the Pinewood?
No, it's not on in Pinewood. They need to change it, but I can understand it's the best. It's a bunch of SEC people around here, but
it just means more to me.
They're shutting you out. You're shutting the green light
out. I know they're
shutting
us out.
You're outnumbered
in
these parts.
Exactly.
It's just you and Joe Rexroad holding strong.
Hey, but we need to beat Purdue. We lost to them last week. We need to beat them today, so we'll see.
And we got the Vols tipping off in just about 5 minutes or so, so we'll keep you updated with Tennessee and Mississippi State. But coming out next, some spicy comments from new Titans wide receiver Calvin Ridley, and I love it. I'm excited about it. I think D-Mace is going to love it too. So we'll get into what Calvin Ridley had to say. Why'd he end up a Tennessee Titan? Some honesty from Calvin Ridley. We'll get into that coming up next. Ask D-Mace in 30 minutes. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Tune in to 102.5 and 106.3 The Game for updates of the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament this week, presented by ESPN Bet Sportsbook, Toyota, and Guinness.